Chromosomes, little strands of nucleic acids and proteins, are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Before we get started, I'm excited to share that my book, Something Extra, is now available. It is rooted in the remarkable spirit of our daughter, Allie, and the heartfelt conversations we've had on the podcast. You'll find wisdom and practical tools to ignite the leader within you and uncover your own Something Extra. Visit somethingextrabook.com or find it at Amazon or in all major bookstores to order your copy today. I'm delighted to have Eric Stone on the show today. Eric is the founder and CEO of ClearPath Ventures and the author of Jumpstart Your Workplace Culture. Well, Eric Stone, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I'm so delighted to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for making the time.
Lisa, it's a pleasure to be on Something Extra.
Well, we're going to have fun, and you have got so much wisdom. I don't know how much we're going to capture, but we're going to try to capture a lot of your wisdom today for our listeners. And I have to give a special shout out to our mutual friend, Tim Sater.
Absolutely. Connected the dots and put us into this situation that we are in today. So absolutely grateful.
I'm so grateful, aren't you? I'm just thinking, I'm so grateful for those connectors in our life. I didn't ask him to connect me, but he said, hey, this is somebody I think you should meet. So you and I may not have crossed paths otherwise. So I'm really grateful for people like that.
Not enough of Tim's out there, right? Not enough of Tim.
I agree. Now, don't let your head get too big, Tim. We love you. We love you. Well, Eric, gosh, there's a lot that I want to cover, but I know that you grew up in Western Massachusetts, right? What are some of your earliest memories of that? And were there some things that happened in your childhood? I know your parents, and you can talk about them too, were very, very influential. Even in your love for business. So just tell me a little bit about growing up.
You got it. Like you said, grew up in Western Mass. Born in Springfield, Massachusetts, where the Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame is. And at about the second grade, moved into Longmeadow, Mass. My parents moved us to try to get into a bit of a better school system. The one thing that really, when you say, hey, what are the things that shape you in your life? One, believe it or not, was I was the smallest kid in my class. So out of all the things you don't probably want, I was the smallest. Now, when you're the smallest, things don't always come easy and you must be quick on your feet. And right. So, or, you know, kids will make fun of you and have fun with it. And I think early on, it allowed me to be very quick-witted, and I had to be. And it allowed me to be a little resilient, and I had to get pretty tough because things weren't always smooth for the little guy. You know? Mm-hmm. And also in school was not easy for me. So I was not a gifted student. I was someone who would put in the time. I'd read a page 5 times. It just didn't always resonate with me. And yet another thing that really, I think, separated me as I went on in life was my ability for the details to consistently do something for an extended period of time until you really master it. And so I think being that small individual, had some challenges learning to eventually, you know, I just figured it out. And so always loved business. I was the paper route guy, the odd jobs guy, started our own business with a buddy of mine, and we had no idea what we were doing, but we're really enjoying making a couple of bucks. I was one of those kids, absolutely motivated by money. Some are not. I definitely was. Mm-hmm. So motivated by the the Olympics, right? So 1980, I'm 10 years old. I see the U.S. Olympic team come together, a group of college individuals who overtake Soviet Union and eventually win the gold medal. Always fascinated with what are these individuals doing? Why are they coming together to do something really special? And so that continued to ripple. And then my parents, my dad was a textile salesman, and I used to eavesdrop over here in all his conversations after a long business trip and the ebbs and flows of his experiences. And my mom was a teacher. So that coachability and teaching and took a little bit of that. My childhood, a great circle of friends was so important to me as I went to high school and college, majored in business, and I land on eventually a company called Enterprise. But those are, you know, the early roots of things.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. So really and truly, as a little guy, I mean, you kind of had to come up with some coping mechanisms and quick-wittedness. And I'm sure that served you well all through life. People love to be around people that have a great sense of humor and can, you know, turn an ordinary moment into something extraordinary, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just those things that allow you, if especially in negotiations in business or
yes.
problem solving, that allow you to really, for whatever reason, have an opportunity to think maybe just a little bit quicker. Though I still always have to, you know, lather, rinse, repeat reading stuff. You know, it allowed me some things that made me definitely better.
Yeah, that's so good. That is really good. Well, you know, I know that your dad really did inspire you and influence you for your love for business. And so you probably at a young age probably decided you knew that you wanted to do something in business, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know there was just something there that I didn't know what it would end up looking like. You know, and then I don't know if you remember, but there was a movie. God, was it in the late 80s? Wall Street? The
Golden Gecko. Yes.
So this was a movie, the highs and lows, the good and bad of a guy named Gordon Gekko. And, you know, again, just being attached to this individual who was always dressed to the nines. And, you know, I just somehow something stuck.
Something stuck there. Yeah. I'm sure you were much nicer than Gordon Gekko.
Yeah, yes. That's why ebbs and flows, you always take from the good and make sure you
yes.
don't lose the bad.
Yes, not quite as ruthless probably as he was. But I know that you when you started Enterprise, and we've talked a little bit about this, you've had a really illustrious career at Enterprise. But when you started there, I think you were a one-person office.
Yeah.
Eric?
Yeah, I mean, you're one of four, you know? So mm-hmm. you're one of four. You have no idea what you're doing. And you're certainly counting on a lot of individuals to help you with your learning curve and your overall employee experience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of four, no idea what I was doing. And to be honest, in the beginning, I don't know if I would have said I had the best training that I would hope for. But what I did find was this bond with some of the people we would work with. And mm-hmm. that was the big thing. It's kind of like they say, finding, you know, your best friend or a good friend at work is really important for engagement.
Yes.
And
yes.
that was there in spades.
Yeah, that's good. I'm sure you carried that forward with you too, because as you moved up the ranks, you know, you probably were looking for that for people, you know, making sure that they felt like they belonged and that they were plugged in to the group. And
yeah, such a good point, Lisa, of the things I might not have received really became these inspirations or a catalyst to what was the foundation of our blueprint as I started to take a bigger leadership position. And the things mm-hmm. I didn't get would be implemented into an initiative. So yeah, really, really important to take, again, the things I might not have gotten. Of course, the things I did get, I just doubled down on them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and to that point, you know, I mean, you climbed the ranks to become one of the most decorated regional vice presidents that the company had seen. I think you ran the most successful, smooth running, profitable region in the history of the company. That's pretty remarkable. I mean, what were the leadership habits during that time, Eric, that were non-negotiables for you?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. We formulated what we would call commitments. You know, is kind of how we phrased it. And but to get from where we started to where we were so many things. But just to go on, the non-negotiables were these things that we utilized, what I actually eventually came to call the think tank. And those were a group of our managers who would get together with me personally every other month and really strategically think about things that were either missing the, what are we losing on? Where's the opportunity? And where are we winning? You know, what are those things we want to continue to do? Mm-hmm. And to me, the things that that think tank group brought out, because they were truly the voice of the region, they were very close to all their fellow coworkers and would pull all of the information that was really important. And those meetings were inspirational to coming up with things like our commitments, those things that we all agree on, those 3 to 5 key business initiatives that we're all going to be in support of. Taking those 3 to 5 key initiatives and making sure it's put within the training infrastructure of your organization. And I think that's where a lot of people sometimes miss it. They have the initiative, but how are we training and developing the individuals to be able to execute it to the highest of level? And we didn't make it too deep. It was the 3 to 5 key commitments that everyone would have. They would call them, as district managers, area commitments. And they would slightly differ only in how they might deliver it, but with the same goals and expectations that we would have. Those goals and expectations were put into the employee review. So now whatever I looked, wherever I was going, whether it was an employee review, my typical daily life at a branch, it was the same thing. It got traction. Traction allows you to do a lot of things. And so those commitments were critical. And to where we ended up becoming, as you mentioned, fortunate to be one of the more prestigious regions within the company.
Yeah. So let me ask you, let's dig into the think tank here. So it's all your managers, right, that were underneath you, were part of this think tank. Were those 3 to 5 initiatives, Eric, did those change? Or because you said you guys met monthly.
I would say they evolved. So you always have something, and what it was actually, it wasn't all the managers. It was those nominated by their peers. So they would get nominated by the group. Mm-hmm. And there would be up to 7, and we'd have a rotation as we wanted it as a leadership initiative as well. And so they get nominated by their peers. They would control the agenda. And what would eventually happen is we would have those keys. So now those keys, what ends up happening with any organization is right sometimes when it's there for an extended period of time, it can get stale. This think tank group allowed us, instead of just always doing a bounce pass for a basketball analogy, mm-hmm. would sometimes find a way, okay, that's getting a little stale. What do we need to do for a behind the back to create a little bit more excitement? And so you take the initiative and give it a little extra juice, a little bit different. And we would take that difference, of course, Lisa, and make sure we trained it on how to execute that difference, mm-hmm. whatever it may have been. And so it definitely evolved to become, I would say, you get a bachelor's degree. We wanted to create a master's degree in the rental car industry. And that's how we would evolve, of constantly giving them the right material, equipment, and information in order to achieve the desired outcome. We had to keep giving them that, because you can't just raise the expectation without raising the level of training.
For sure. And that was probably the difference right there is the training that you mapped back to that initiative. I love that. You know, you say one of your isms, I guess, if you will, is you say that culture is what happens when the leaders aren't in the room. How did you cultivate that level of ownership? I mean, I think about extreme ownership. How did you cultivate that, Eric? And it probably started with this group of this think tank, I would imagine.
Well, you know, I would say we really focused on these, I called it a philosophy or pillars of engagement that allowed, because step one, you always got to build trust. So I can't just walk in and they're going to trust me overnight. And so anytime I took over a new opportunity, we would really hone in on these factors. And so the things that made a difference to make people believe, to create culture carriers, to do all those things when I'm not around, because we'd have 50 brick and mortars. I can't be at them. I can't answer the phones, you know, and things like that. And so it was, what are we doing to encourage a strong relationship with our manager? You know, what are those 2 to 3 initiatives that we're going to truly, from the hiring process and all the way through hire to retire type of stuff, what's the initiative that we're going to truly believe in that strengthens relationships and builds trust, those seeds of trust? The second was just clearly communicating your goals and expectations along the way. So we wanted everyone to have a role, and we just wanted them to star in their role. I would say then, of course, we've already mentioned right material, equipment, and information in order to achieve that outcome. Okay, now I've got it. Now I can be successful. They've removed the noise by clearly communicating. Now I can be successful and execute personally and professionally to help them develop themselves in and out of work. So if we had a work meeting, we might spend 20 minutes talking about how you might want to budget and take your own analysis of our own financials. Take that at home. Go look at your cable bill. Go look at the, you know, whatever it is.
It's good. Yeah.
You know, and bring in a component that it's not just all about what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. And then lastly is recognize effort, but reward excellence. So you got to find some way to thank people for what they're doing. And that is what helped us create some of that belief. We just live that. And each one of those would have an initiative or so, right, under what we're all trying to do. And so the best example would be with the first one, a strong relationship. We called or created through the think tank something called the 30 Minutes of Fame. It was our way to once a month at the minimum, you would meet with your team for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. How are you doing, Lisa? Tell me about what's new. And then the last half of that is, well, let's talk about some of the goals and expectations and things that are going to help you be successful.
Yeah, that's so good. I love it. Well, you wrote a book. I've got it right here. Jumpstart Your Workplace Culture, A Roadmap for Igniting High Performance. Who would not want to read that book? I mean, because we're all wanting to make sure that our workplace cultures are the best that they can be. And certainly we want high performing teams. I'm going to read the way that you describe culture. It is here on page 6. Let me get here. You say a high performance culture happens when a set of shared values and beliefs drive the right behaviors, creating a consistent experience and desirable outcomes. You know, and so I think probably in your think tank and getting those commitments and those shared beliefs, everybody has to have that, right? And then everybody agreeing to that, and then that is going to help you be, you know, the outcomes be more consistent then. You know, so I love that. What are some of the biggest misconceptions do you think, Eric, that people have about workplace culture?
Well, I think they think it's soft, philosophical, all about your hugs and high fives.
Yes. Kumbaya kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and don't get me wrong. There are components that you want, you know, hugs and high fives, I guess. But I think it's just completely misunderstood. I think it is something that is the catalyst, in my opinion. It is the catalyst to execution. The reason there's so many reasons why it's important. But when you look at why people do the things they do, why do they have these behaviors in action, which is the shortest definition of culture, is they just feel inspired to do the thing that they have come aboard to do because they feel they're supported. There's empathy, as I like to say, with accountability. You know, there is high character with high standard. Sometimes we just think it's all about empathy in culture. It is not.
Right.
The brick and mortars are empathy with accountability.
Without the accountability, you have no results.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. I mean, it is soft if it's just empathy. But yeah, I've got a good friend, Pat Asp, and she says, just because I am soft of heart doesn't mean I'm not hard of hand. And what she means by that is, you know, it's both of those things, right? So, so important. You know, you say that culture is measurable. Yeah. And it's predictable. Tell me more about that, Eric.
So one of the biggest things when I was doing research for the book was reaching out to hundreds of people and really just saying, you know, hey, Lisa, what's workplace culture to you and how do you measure it? And you'd hear crickets. I mean, it was this thing they couldn't find a way to describe and or measure. And so the one thing I remembered is anytime, whether it was in my career at Enterprise or just helping others get there, There were a few things that showed us the way. Number one is engagement from many of the statistics led to really good outcomes, really good increase of customer satisfaction and loyalty. It shapes even the things like dependability and reduction of absenteeism and all of the things that matter. Profit, of course, matters. And so I double weighted and took a look at engagement's one piece, but then the retention's another. And so what we did is I had six things that I put all together. I should say the double weighted were really the customer and employee experience. So those two actually would be on the top. What is your engagement of your team? You do have to periodically find a way to figure that out through surveys, conversations, think tanks, whatever it is. And when your employees are in that good spirit and they're enthusiastic and motivated, it tends to trickle over to the customer. And so those were just red flags to me that if we're going to measure, we got to start with the employee side and the customer side. And there's a variety of ways that organizations can get a net promoter score, customer satisfaction score. And then the ripple effect really then actually trickles to more of the retention things, because I can stay with the company. I just might not be motivated, but you still do need to look at it. You still need to keep a gauge on that. Depending on if you're a new or established company, you know, profit and or market share might be really important that you have to take a look at. So numbers are really going to matter. Inclusivity is something that you've got to figure out. Are you mirroring the demographics that you do business in? Does that align? And those were just a few things that you could put together and get your own baseline. So I created, in a sense, a little bit of a formula that would allow you to check the health of your organization. But that doesn't mean there aren't other warning signs, you know, and so the warning signs, for example, all of a sudden ethical violations start spiking. You know, that's a cultural problem. So there are all of the too many silos, especially when you don't want silos. You know, that's something that's a red flag. Absenteeism, you having a happy hour and no one shows. Just little obvious things. The artifacts in organizations. You might have these buzzwords or these things that when you go in a restaurant, for example, you either see or don't see. You might see a championship belt and someone holding their sales belt around. That's exciting. That's culture. That's something. If you're not seeing these things, those are signs. You don't even need a scorecard. It's like when you do go into a restaurant, Lisa, you can feel the energy. I mean, you can. Is it good? Is it bad? You could get your own barometer. I just happen to use a variety of terms that would really allow me to get a baseline.
Yeah, that is so good. That is so good. Yeah, I love that you brought up the cultural red flags. And you know, we have to pay attention. I mean, we really do have to pay attention to what is going on and those little signs. Like you said, I love that. You know, you have a happy hour, nobody shows up. You know, there's something going on there, right?
Yeah, and that goes into, depending on if you can, but if you're in manufacturing, man, the leader's got to walk the floor a lot.
Yes. I mean,
you just have to, because we talked about commitments to begin, but the worst thing that can happen is when you think you're instrumenting this game plan, you go into the field or observe. I call it listen, observe, and learn, the LOLs of that. And you find out actually that the team has a point. There is a reason they can't do one of the initiatives. We missed something. We thought we got it. We didn't supply them with enough to be successful. And so it allows you to check the reality of by having a presence. And I think those are the basic things. Just have a consistent presence.
Yes. Management by walking around, I think is what it's called, I think. Yeah. So yeah, you got to be, and then I've got friends that talk about Gemba. You know, like being on the shop floor, you got to be where the work is happening so that you can see. And to your point, there may be obstacles that you weren't aware of that's preventing them from even completing that initiative. So, so important. Well, let's talk about this. And then I've got a couple more questions and we'll take a quick break. But I want to talk about your metaphor of the road trip that your family would take a lot, and mostly to Cape Cod, I think.
Yes, you're very good. Yeah.
You know, how, you know, you said that family trips in the Rockwood camper connect to leadership. I mean, tell me a little bit more about that.
Oh my God. Well, the funny thing is on those road trips, you better have boundaries, because in those days, you know, my brother and sister were on each side of me. I would, of course, get the worst seat possible because I was the youngest. And God forbid you went on someone's side of the tracks, you would be getting, you know, a nice elbow maybe in the time. And so you better have boundaries as you go on those road trips.
Yes.
And you better come prepared, because you better have, in those days, were the Walkman. You better have some sort of device that's going to preoccupy you to stay focused and do what you want to do. Hopefully on the road trip, I call it choose your passengers carefully. Well, I couldn't choose my family, but it was important that we had a strong relationship that would allow us to go on those 4-hour drives up to wherever we were going. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the road trip, very similar to culture, is it's just a journey. It's not something that is developed overnight. So.
Well, those passengers, I'm thinking it's the same in, you know, when you're developing a team, right? And when you're putting a team together, you want to make sure, you know, you're picking the right passengers and making sure those passengers are on the right, in the right seat too, I think is really important.
There's a funny, Lisa, funny Turkish proverb in it. And it goes something that when a clown moves into a palace, he doesn't become king. The palace becomes a circus. And so when you're bringing in the wrong people, bad things can happen, to your point about the hiring process, which could be another book in itself.
Yes, 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 yes. And we've talked about that. You probably have another book in you, Eric. Yeah. So we need to be on the lookout for that. You know, you talk about on any great road trip, there's detours. Do you have an example of a detour? Sometimes my friend Dennis Muhlenberg, who used to be the CEO for Boeing, he calls it side trips. And he always talks about how does he put it? It's like, don't despise the side trips, because sometimes the side trips are when really cool, important things happen. But is there an example of a detour in your career that you made, Eric, that you could, you know, tell us about? Or, you know, maybe it was a blessing. Maybe it was a blessing in disguise.
Well, I mean, I would even just say, you know, one of the things that have made this topic so popular is there's 5 generations in the workplace, each valuing different things that are important to them, from the Gen Z all the way up through the boomers. So, you know, the one of the things that was a detour for me is when the millennials in the time were the new generation, and me really not getting the fact that, wait a sec, it seems like time became a currency. And we had to understand this. And so by being in the field and understanding that what used to work is not working anymore, and we came up with, in a sense, generational perspective training. So it wasn't just that I could learn from the millennials at the time, for example. It was so the millennials could learn my worldview and my point, or I should say from the Gen X, so I shouldn't say mine. And so this, we were missing the mark. We were missing some of the mark. And through digging in, we then said, my God, not everyone is motivated the way we are all motivated. Now, we know people are motivated differently, but that generation really was a shift. Mm-hmm. That shift allowed us to come up with an initiative that we called scheduling with precision. So we said, if time is important, let's ensure that we're doing something to free up your time. Let's look at all of our initiatives. Let's look at all of the reports. Let's look at everything we got. And let's try to streamline some things that might be better served so you can execute some of those things in work, but be able to be have a great life out of work. And so we did this scheduling with precision that became a bit of a detour. We really refined what we would give out, what we would expect during certain times. And so there were a lot of things that we had to synthesize. And I really think it started from a generational perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So important. That's, you know, we could probably spend the rest of the podcast just on that, you know, with the 5 generations in the workplace and understanding that. But we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Eric Stone on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Eric Stone. Oh, my goodness, Eric, you have got so much wisdom, so much experience, but you're not that old. It's not that you're old. You're just experienced, right?
There you go. That's right. That's right.
You talk about the 5 factors of engagement, and I think this will be really helpful for our listeners, because I think everybody is trying to figure out how we can make sure that our employees are more engaged. Can you dig into those, 5 factors a little bit? And is there one in particular that you think leaders sometimes underestimate?
That's a great question. So for the first one, for example, so strong relationship with your manager, and especially as we go into the world of hybrid and remote and in person, and how the beauty of the factors is it doesn't discriminate against generational perspective or where you're working. You still need to have a strong relationship. Now, how you have that is going to be harder, let's be honest, if it is something that is remote. Now, I have 11 nieces and nephews, 3 kids of my own, and they have their circles of 5, and they're all really the Gen Z type. And some are mixed with in-person, remote, hybrid. So it's great to use them as a barometer. Mm-hmm. And the key for relationship building, especially in if we circle to the hybrid side, is just what are those things that you're going to be able to do from the onboarding piece, from the employee journey piece? I think you just have to take a time out and truly roadmap what you're trying to do to create that relationship. Some of them could be as simple. I wish we had the technology 20 years ago that if I wanted to visit someone in New Rochelle, New York, man, I could just join a morning meeting and hop on a virtual call. I mean, I lost opportunities to sure. do that. It would have made me much more omnipresent, and I could have made mm-hmm. more relationships that were built. And so I think for each of them, you just have to figure out what can we do, whatever work style we're in. Okay, so what do I think? That clear communication of goals and expectations would be the one that I think is shockingly, I just talked to too many individuals. And,
yes.
You know, you go around a boardroom. Let's say you're part of a board and you say, hey, we have a great cause here, whatever that cause may be. And you ask each board member to describe either the purpose of the organization or in 30 seconds, go and tell me what we're all about. And you are going to hear some drastically different things. And I don't know, well, I do know why, but I mean, that to me is the one that I think we get in such a rush. There's a flavor of the week mentality at times. We're just trying to flush all this information so it's off of my chest and you now know it and you better learn it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it gets lost there.
Oh, I could not agree more. I could not agree more, because I always say if there is an issue or problem, it's usually that it was not communicated well, or the person receiving it wasn't really understanding and you moved on too quickly, right? But that's so good. Yeah, so your 5 are relationships, communication, resources, development, and recognition. So I really do believe that you're right in that communicating. Well, let's talk about that then. So if that's one that is underestimated, how can leaders get better at clearly articulating what the expectations are, Eric?
Great. Yeah. Great segue into, I call them the ABCs of communication. And when you look at the A, amplify. So what is the organization? We talk 3 to 5 key priorities, right? What are those things we're going to truly amplify? It might be the new technology that came out, it might be the new initiative or the initiative that we have. It is those big hitters that everybody in the organization must have. I'm going to give you an example of an amplifying a message. If it was new technology, I would recommend, and this is what we would do. So if a new technology came out, we would first bring all our managers up in person. Now, you might not be able to do it nowadays, so you have your virtual setting. And we would go over this really important thing that we're going to have, this new technology, how to utilize it, the 3 key things that we need to focus on to execute the technology properly. From that meeting, they would go back and they would have a morning huddle with their team. Their assistant managers would now either come up virtually, I guess nowadays, or in person. We'd go over the same thing, with the exception of they had to tell us what the meeting was about before we go over this little scenario. So what was communicated to you?
Yes.
They would then go back. We would have a recap for each level. Here's the recap, high level, can't be too long, of what we discussed. They then would now take the entry-level position, and a morning huddle would be discussed. We would not stop there. So, of course, morning huddle, I want to know what's topical. Oh my God, this technology, that's really exciting. But how are they going to use it? Well, we use the 5th factor, the rewarding excellence, or recognizing and rewarding great performance. And we said, we're going to come up with a little contest, because this is going to be amplified to everybody. Whoever utilizes this technology the best from a usage standpoint, we're going to allow you to receive said awards. award for the month. And so that is just amplifying one small way. We then, of course, as I even mentioned earlier, that stuff would be now in your employee review. We are not talking about it once. It's not just a morning huddle. It wasn't just the meeting. It's in your employee review under leveraging technology or in other category. You can't not know about it. There's just too many mm-hmm. talking points. Mm-hmm. Then you got the B. The buffer is also an art. These are the ways I called it the distraction catcher in the book. Like, you know, you've got to find a way to avoid some of the noise and synthesize things throughout your organization. Easiest example, of course, we have too many meetings. Let's maybe we consolidate the meeting. I don't need a 15-page document, Lisa. I just need the three things that are really critical to know. And so the organizations that buffer that are also key. And then the C is convey. They're just really good at our holiday parties coming up. Everyone knows about it. Nice to know, not necessarily need to know everything about it, but they just balance. And when you buffer and convey, your amplify compounds. And I think that's what great organizations do.
That's so good. That is so good. Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, you know, let me talk to you about this. I mean, you after your corporate career, illustrious career, I mean, number one region in the history of the company. I mean, just really incredible. You started ClearPath Ventures, I think, in 2018. You know, what was the biggest mind shift for you going from this large corporate structure to now you're kind of on the entrepreneurial wagon, you know?
Well, first, I never thought I would do it. And this was a formulation of relationships from the past who were calling me and saying, hey, I could use some help. And so ClearPath was a way to hopefully make their vision, moving some of the obstacles a little bit clearer. What was really evident right away is, well, I had a huge support staff who I could just kind of delegate, as they say, pass the assist. I mean, I had so many great people, and yeah, they allowed me to be even better. And when you start something and it's you and it's you're creating a proposal for a speaking opportunity or for a client meeting. And yeah, I never had to really do that. I got a bunch of people. So that was much slower for me because I had to really take time to eventually create my shell or drafts or kind of cheat sheet of a few big things that would help me. Even invoicing. I mean, you're creating an invoice, and I never really had a
You never did that, right? Yeah.
So, the
accounting department did that, right?
That's right. So rewarding, but rewarding much differently. Challenging, and just challenging a little bit differently.
Yes. You know, I'm just thinking, Eric, scheduling my meetings. You know, you've met my EA, Jenny. It's like, oh my goodness, where would I be, you know, without her? Because she does all of that. Yeah. But in the beginning, I mean, Greg and I started our company 31 years ago. Wow. And in the beginning, we were the, you know, customer service, were the sales department, the accounting department, you know, the whole nine yards. So, you know, I want to let our listeners know, go get Eric's book, Jumpstart Your Workplace Culture. I know that it's going to really help you. I know you're going to love the book, but also follow Eric. And Eric, I was looking at lots, like you put really awesome stuff out on LinkedIn, articles and blogs and things like that. Here's one that, you know, you talk about, you say, you know, hiring the right person is one of the hardest challenges any organization faces. The problem, most candidates bring their A game.
Yeah.
And their rehearsed optimal answers. You know, so the secret is real insights come from seeing their typical responses. So tell us a little bit more about like your strategy when you were hiring people. I mean, how'd you pull that out, the truth?
Yes. Oh my God. Well, let me first say in the beginning, I was probably terrible. I mean, as I was originally starting in a branch manager trying to interview this person, I'm sure I made so many mistakes and biases I probably had. They call them the horn and halo effect, where at least if you said you're a Red Sox fan, I'm hiring you. You know, I love Red Sox. We're
yes. Yes.
And so it was trial and error. But what I found that worked best for me and my team was I was the third stop. And so I was really checking to see if this was going to match that culture we had. And I needed to find a way, as you mentioned, to find their typical versus optimal. And the best way to do it was to try to make them as comfortable as they could in an interview setting. It's one of my favorite lines I even opened up with. I know this is stressful. My goal is you're interviewing me just like I'm interviewing you. Please understand that. And I wanted them to just tell me a little bit about them. I know this is something Elon Musk actually does, is tell me your story. Mm-hmm. And that could be anything. And what it allowed them to do was just hone in on the things that were important. I try to find commonality into those, some of the things. So I just wanted them to tell me who they were. By telling me who they were, unprovoked, I didn't have to, you know, look for key buzzwords about were they going to be persuasive? Were they going to be really great with customer service? It's what they told me was going to be really important. I then had a couple of tricks along the way. So even before the interview, I called it attitude, effort, and coachability were really the big things that I always wanted to be mindful of. I think if you have that, you're in really good shape. Mm-hmm. But even how they would treat my HR manager or executive assistant when they would come to the interview. So when I'm done with the interview, I would always go and say, when you just introduced yourself, how'd they treat you? You know, this was a character test, and you learn a lot from people on what they do or don't do.
Yes.
Then there was the question, through the interview, I wanted to get them, I wanted to take an opposing side. So I needed to see that if I push them in a professional way, if I really challenge them on a thought, are they going to hold ground? Are they going to believe in the values that have got them to where they are? And mm-hmm. so there would also be something of their conviction to something. Another biggie was, what does work-life balance mean to you, Lisa? I needed to understand what they claim work-life balance is. Everyone looks at it quite differently. So mm-hmm. I wanted to understand those things. And so it was more of like a psych evaluation, I tell you, that then I was not looking, it wasn't right or wrong. So if you disagreed that on customer service, I would sometimes say, is the customer always right or wrong? You know, can they be wrong? I didn't care what they said. I didn't care if they said, no, the customer is wrong. I just wanted to understand their thought process that went behind why they would make a statement.
Right.
So I wanted to encourage them to just tell me who they were and find little moments that I might give them a little push at the end. And my last thing I would usually say is, when you leave this interview, I want you to talk to a mentor, someone who you really trust, who you really believe in. And I want you to tell them all about the good and the bad of where you're going to be coming. And I want you to take your time, because if we call or when we call, I don't want you to make a rash decision. I want it well thought out. And I've seen this with my nieces and nephews and kids. It's like you get an offer and they just don't even know what to do.
Right.
And so those were just, whether it was few questions or things that I traditionally look for, but more importantly, was training my team to not have some of those biases, to ask the right clarifying questions so you don't think they said something when they just didn't articulate it the way they wanted. And that's why it's this art and science, and it is not easy. And I had many a mistake in my day.
Oh, yeah. So have I. and to your point, you know, I can remember hiring somebody and it turned out to be a great hire, but they went to our university. I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah.
You know, the association, right?
The halo effect. It's the halo effect.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well, you've got so many great ones here. I love this one. You know, it's called Get Up, and you know, it's all about a coach and a, you know, player falling down, and the coach says, get up. A lot of people criticize that coach, saying you were too, brash with him, or you weren't empathetic enough or whatnot. And he said, no, you know, I knew that this player could get up and do well. And you said that real leadership isn't always about comfort. It is about calling people to their potential, especially when it hurts. And sometimes love sounds like get up. Not because you're weak, but because someone knows you're strong.
Oh, you know, it is one of that interview.
That
just gave me my own little goosebumps. Like that coach was just so right on. And almost with one of your questions of this misconception of culture, it's not all out of love. The love was believing that person could rise.
Yes.
And that's this that's this uniqueness of what special workplace cultures look like.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, just listeners, go and follow Eric. Trust me, you'll be glad that you did. Oh my goodness, I have all kinds of other things. If you could have dinner with one leader, and I think you mentioned, which I absolutely love too, Coach John Wooden.
Oh yeah.
Is that who you would have dinner with?
He would absolutely be on the Mount Rushmore of the people I would have loved to have met and learned from. So
yes.
He would absolutely be one. You got to throw a Warren Buffett for this. I'm very much about humility. I love the people. I tell it to my kids all the time. The ultimate flex is not flexing. Warren Buffett doesn't need a flex. He drives his, whatever year Buick in the same house.
Same house that he's been in the whole time.
He believes in his principles. He follows his principles. He follows his values. He executes to the highest of level and has become this Oracle of Omaha. And what a story. It's just amazing.
Right. Yeah. So many awesome leaders out there that we can learn from. But I could not agree more. Go get the book, Wooden, if you don't have that. And Wooden on Leadership. It's really just phenomenal. Well, goodness gracious. You wrote this book. You've won. I know that you don't want you would not want me to say this, but this book has won lots of awards. It's won the Hustle and Heart Award, the Pinnacle Achievement Award, International Book Award. Congratulations, Eric. That's really phenomenal because there are a lot of books out there. Well, let me ask you one more question. I could ask you a lot more questions, but we're running out of time here. What is the something extra that you believe every leader needs?
I might have to give you two, only because we talked about like real estate, location. In corporate world, it's communication. And we talked about the importance of those ABCs. I will say, trust is one of those things within your organization that is going to be unbelievably critical. You can't go from where you want if people truly don't believe in the message. Mm-hmm. And then maybe a small thing, and I don't know if this is necessarily that extra thing, but I sometimes think we fall. We always think we have to learn from failure. I saw this thing from another coach, and we're going to learn from winning, so we don't have to learn from losing. I thought that was really interesting approach, that we always think we're supposed to lose, but only like when we lose, that's our biggest learning lesson. And it is. And most of mine probably are for losing. But let's learn from winning too. I mean, that's okay, right? We want to be great. And so that was something I recently saw that I think could really help people that there's more ways to continue to be coached.
Yeah, that's good. I think I even read something about that with the Japanese. Was it a rowing team?
Oh, yeah, like yeah.
A rowing team and the American team. And, learning from winning. I mean, they won every time, right? And that's good. Well, Eric, this has been so good. Thank you so much for being with me today. And I know that this is going to help our listeners. And I just wish you the best of luck with all that you're doing. I know you're going to be helping a lot of people.
Thank you, Lisa. And great questions. Really appreciate it. It's a nice different flavor, and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.